From the studios of Dublin City FM, on FM Fridays at 3 p.m. and anytime worldwide in podcast, it's Dublin's only garden radio show, in association with greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. This is The Sod Show.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Sod Show on Dublin City FM, or if you're listening on the website or in a podcast, good morning, maybe good evening, maybe good night. We'll have a very good whatever time of day it might happen to be for you. This is The Sod Show in association with greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. I'm Niall O'Keefe, and this week on the show, Peter Dunnigan and friends go walkabout in one of South Dublin's finest and greenest areas, Corca Park, near the Nace Road, with thanks to the ever-helpful park wardens of South Dublin County Council. We've also got all the latest gardening news and information, plus music from one of the bands that defined the Brit pop era. It's The Sod Show, Ireland's garden radio show and podcast. Let's get it started. Now, every week we ask for your gardening news, what you'd like us to read out on the show and the announcements at the start, this bit here. And one guy who's had a bit of fun with us before on this is known as Paysan, P-A-Y-S-A-N, on Twitter. Well, he's back, and this time he's tweeting to tell us that slugs are surfing across his vegetable beds using leaves as surfboards. He says, "I'm sure I saw a submarine surface on the lawn today." Well, we weren't aware that slugs were that technologically advanced, Paysan, but, well, thanks for that again. In more or less serious news, this week there's an ad up on dundeal.ie that, well, we think isn't all that serious, but it's worth having a look at because it's a bit of a laugh. It reads, "Money Bush for Sale." And I think we need the sad music for this bit. In 1968, my father inadvertently drove his David Brown Selectomatic over a leprechaun in the Haggard. The little fellow was buried as quickly as possible, and a tea rose bush planted on the spot. 7 years to the day after the leprechaun was buried, a crisp green £1 note appeared on the bush. My father put it in the poor box on Sunday and said nothing of it. The next year, and for all the subsequent years, the bush flowered with more and more notes, changing to the euro with the rest of the country. My poor father died last year, and because he always gave the money from the money bush to charity, he had nothing to leave us. Now we are in trouble with the old mortgage and need to raise a bit of cash. We don't want to take the money for ourselves, as our father warned us with his dying breath that we would be cursed if we did. So we're putting it up for sale. We're fairly sure if you had nothing to do with the death of the leprechaun, you'll be all right. Says then at the end, must be collected, and the price is €100,000. Yeah, I think we're going to pass on that one. Not going to take it too seriously. Getting back to some real gardening news, though, and calling all busy bees. Trot along and muck into the Balbriggan Allotment Association Open Day, where you can sign up for an allotment and groups of friends or neighbours can register for adjacent allotments. It's on Saturday, 20th of October. That's tomorrow week, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the allotment initiative includes beekeeping and communal pig rearing as well. For more information, contact Katrina Redmond on Twitter. She's at WholesomeIE, or search for Balbriggan Allotments on Facebook. Heading west to County Clare, the county where I spent most of the summers of my formative years, and the county where more than 25 communities were honoured at the 2012 Community Environmental Awards ceremony, which was hosted by the County Council on the evening of Monday last. Well, 34 groups participated in this year's Clare in Bloom Awards, a competition targeted at groups who are actively involved in the improvement and enhancement of their areas. And the big prizes went to Ballynacally Development Group, which was named overall winner of the Clare in Bloom competition, and Capa Lodge in 6 Mile Bridge, which claimed the top prize in the Best Kept Local Authority Estates Competition 2012. How prestigious. The 6 Mile Bridge team gets an engraved limestone plaque, a cheque for €600, and the Mary Hennessy Memorial Award. Well done, folks. Now, Spuds.ie, who Peter met last week on the show, are planning a Spuds Taste Fest at the Compost Community Garden at Stony Batter in Dublin 7, where they have been growing blue Danubes as part of the research there. It takes place in a few weeks' time, and they'll be getting local chefs to cook up these naturally blight-resistant varieties for the public to sample. For more information, point your blight-resistant web browsers at spuds.ie. Now, this just in from the We're Awesome department. As you may know, we've not only been nominated, but we've been shortlisted in the Best Podcast category in this year's Irish Blog Awards, which are taking place tomorrow night. So, not ones to be left out of the action, Peter, myself, and my wonderful other half will be making ourselves look nice and heading on down to Naas to attend this awards shindig. Here's the thing, though. Shortly after we found out about this prestigious nomination, and it is a prestigious nomination, we were made aware that we've also been nominated for a European Podcast Award under the Personality category. Well, you can hardly imagine our surprise there, although, of course, we weren't that surprised, as we've got buckets of personality, so we're overflowing with the stuff. Anyway, the awards are sponsored by Olympus and Hindenburg Systems. Pretty high-class stuff, and if you'd like to vote for us, you can. The relevant links, as usual, are up on sodshow.com. Finally, for now, there's a special offer on compostable bags for home and garden from Greensacks in B&Q, Airside Business Park and Swords. They're going for 33% off. And of course, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden, are our very kind sponsors here on The Sod Show. That's our gardening news and announcements for this week. If there's anything you'd like included next week or any week, you can contact us on Twitter via @SodShow, or for more methods of getting in touch with the show, or for any of the article links, websites and Twitter handles mentioned here, head to the website. It's an easy one to remember, folks, sodshow.com. Right, it's time to go up the country, although this week we're not straying away from the city really, as we head to one of South Dublin's beauty spots. Not me, you understand, I'm staying here in a nice warm studio with a nice warm cup of coffee. But in the meantime, Peter Dunnigan and a group of ramblers, most of them, like me, of the non-green-fingered variety, headed out to Corca Park last Sunday, and we're going to join them. It was opened to the public in 1986. The 120-hectare domain dates back to 1650, with Corca House being constructed there between 1702 and 1714. Well, the history and life story of the park are far better told by the staff of South Dublin County Council, who Peter says were ever so lovely in their welcoming of the garden group. These were Moiriny Donal, Joe Hickey, and first up, here's David Cotter.
Well, first of all, on behalf of South Dublin County Council, I'd like to invite you, or welcome you, to Corca Regional Park, one of four regional parks in South Dublin County, and one of 14 in the Greater Dublin area. So you're most welcome to be here today. We're very lucky with the weather. And what myself and Joe Hickey, who I'll introduce now in a second, will hopefully do is to give you a flavour of what this park has to offer, both from the natural history as well as the built heritage of it. As I say, unfortunately, it is quite a large park. It's over 120 hectares or 300 acres, so we're not going to get to see every single piece of it. But what we'll do is we'll see a part of it that'll hopefully, as I say, give you this flavour. And afterwards, if you're most welcome to join us, we have laid on some tea and coffee back at the depot buildings. And it'll be a chance for you to maybe just relax, see something that we've been working on over the last few months, trying to document the built heritage of the park. And also, it's right beside the pet farm, which would be ideal for our younger members here on this walk.
What are the main features of the park?
There's many, many features. As I say, as you can see, it's a public park. It has a lot of recreation facilities. We have everything from a cricket ground to a dog track to a cycle track. Lots of playing pitches of different descriptions, and we also have a baseball track as well. We have a pet farm, which is one of the initiatives that came out of the staff who are based here, and that has been actually a great attraction, especially for families and for kids and for school children and the like. So again, you're going to see some of this as we walk along on the walk. Hopefully it'll give you that flavour. There's an awful lot of history associated with this place, because as you see it today, it is a public parkland, but over the last 300, 400, 500 years, it was a former landed estate. There was a number of families that resided here. And before that, it was a landscape that was industrialised. We have just not far from us here the ruins of an oil mill and a corn mill. The oil mill making linseed and rape oil products. And then at the very end of the park was an actual gunpowder manufacturing facility. Part of it's in private ownership, but part of it's in public ownership, being partly incorporated into the park here. And there's only two examples in the whole of the country. One just here, which is the ruins of the building, and then the other one is in Ballycollig down in County Cork. So with further ado, I just want to introduce you to Joe Hickey, the park ranger here, park ranger extraordinaire, I should say. He's kindly agreed to lead this guided walk. He has a great knowledge of the history of this place and the sense of what kind of landscape that it is. Not many of us can often say that we enjoy our workplaces, but Joe actually is one of those that does. And as you can see today, it is a wonderful place to work in. So hopefully, as I say, as we walk through it, it'll give you this flavour of what's to offer here, as I say, from the Natural and Built Heritage. We reckon that the guided tour will last about an hour or so. I'm conscious that there's some younger members who, if they feel it's a bit too much, we're not going to be too far away from, say, where the pet farm is. So that might be a place where they can go and look at the animals. They can just take it easy or whatever. So without further ado, I'll pass you over to Joe to lead us off. And between the two of us, we're going to kind of butt in and out at different times, explaining the different things that you will be seeing as we walk along.
Well, as Dave says, that it's a 300-acre park. To cover the entire park would take about 3.5 to 4 hours. Right, so that's not going to happen today, naturally enough. What we're going to do is start over here at the allotments. We then go across to the wildlife lakes, where the burial grounds are. I came across here about 5 or 6 years ago. And from there to the baseball area. We can cut across either to the wild garden or back into the arboretum, which will bring us to the pet farm area and to what we call number 7 beside the pet farm, where we do all our talks and tours and all to that. So I think we just go ahead now and start over here. Right?
Lead the way.
All right, follow us.
Okay, this is the allotment site here. I haven't got the key, unfortunately, but just take a brief look in, you'll see that they're quite a big plot, and a lot of people get a lot of enjoyment in here because it's well closed in with all the trees right around, okay? And you have the river Camac, which flows down the back of you there, right? So it's very popular. It's paid off. Okay, this year was a bad year weather-wise. Lots of rain. And it's 27, I think. I think it's 27. We made another couple. Some are too big, and they had to divide them in half because they're too big to manage. So if that was the case, you could double that up to a good 40, you know, which is a good idea by having two people on the one allotment.
Is there still the school allotment here?
I have one little one over there.
Yeah, oh, okay.
That one was too big, so I've got them into the corner.
Yeah.
The school, really, the local school.
And they come up here?
And the kids come up here.
Okay.
And do all the little bits of planting of strawberries and stuff like that, you know what
yeah.
I mean? It gets them interested, and it also shows them that everything just doesn't come in a plastic bag, you know what I mean? So that's really basically it, okay? So we can move on now up to the wildlife lakes.
New thing that was put into the park recently, and there are exercise machines for adults, really, but you can see that there are young people and older people using them, but we've got a really, a lot of people have come in and enjoy. You see, this man is doing the foot twister or whatever. So a lot of people use them, and it's nice to see.
It's a way to get people using the park in a different way so that they can get a bit of exercise.
Yeah.
And we've actually moved them into a few of the other different parks as well. And they're a great attraction, as you see. Like, yeah. Look at the kids there having great fun on them.
Okay, folks, the reason why we're stopping here is there's 3 wildlife lakes here, and they're retention lakes. Because the housing estate here in Cherrywood used to flood out during the winter, the heavy rains. So it was decided then to put in these retention lakes. This particular lake here was to be the entire field here. But when they were digging this out, mostly up that area up there, they came across, this is a burial ground. Okay. All this field here, they're still covered in. They were all covered back up again.
It's found here.
It's going back to the medieval times, they reckon. There was bodies, remains scattered all across here. And right up, the playground is just here. And right up to the playground is a big hill where they took all the soil and moved it up to there, which is now called Skeleton Hill. Because when they were moving all the soil, there was bits of bodies going up onto it. Right? And they were trying to get everything gone before somebody spotted it. But lucky enough, there was a person walking by and saw all the remains here and got a stop to put to immediately. Lucky enough. The photographs, we have them up in number 7.
Yeah.
Or you have not?
Yeah, yeah, I brought a few here. There was no evidence for this at all. And normally, historians and archaeologists would look at the documented evidence, and there was just nothing recorded ever for a settlement in this general area. And we are talking the early medieval period, anywhere between 400 to 1200 AD. And the way there was a giveaway, actually, if you look very carefully, you see a kind of like a circular field system there. Normally, that is a sign that there's an enclosure of some description. Christian, possibly monastic. And that was, it's only when the archaeologists actually discovered this, and then they looked around and said, yeah, actually that makes sense. There is something here. But it has to say, there was just nothing ever recorded. Now, and as I say, the remains, they found 20 human skeletons. They're a mixture of adults, juveniles and children. There's still a lot of it still here. Following advice from the, then it was then Dukas, the Office of Public Works, the agreement was to just move the lake, as Joe said, over this direction and to put a geotextile material down and then put the soil back on top of it. Because like everything, there was only a limited amount of budget and archaeological digs cost a lot of money and archaeologists cost a lot of money. So the feeling was just to leave everything in situ. So it's still there. So maybe someday in the future when the economy is better and there's money available, we'll be able to do a lot further exploration of what actually was going on here. There was no doubt they were Christian. They were buried in shrouds. You actually saw a picture of some of the finds that they found with the bodies there. The lignite bracelet. They also found some glass beads. So there were a community. And there is evidence dotted around from previous occasions when they were putting in services into the park, notably pipelines, and that they found a Neolithic closure. The remnants of that, which is signs of post holes, because these houses would have been timber originally, which kind of using branches or straw or whatever to make a roof of it. And they found that just actually where the playground is. And then just generally in this general area, they found evidence of pits where they would have actually cremated bone or charcoal. They found when they did excavations and did analysis, that's what they found. They're dating it to the 9th century, so that's where the early medieval period comes into it. And there's still ongoing work, actually. Believe it or not, that was good, 7, 8, 9 years ago. I actually was talking to the archaeologists there recently, and they're still actually doing work on these finds and trying to identify more about it and try and get a picture of it. There is a possibility that it was somehow connected with Condalkin village, which is not far from here. About a mile, Joe, would it? Yeah. And that was a monastic settlement founded by St. Mocha. And a lot of the lands that we're actually walking on at one stage, before they were turned into parklands, parkland settings or landed estates, was land owned by the church, by the monastic settlement that was here before eventually the See of Dublin. And so in some way, it had some kind of an importance from that sense. It might have been a community just living here and working here and obviously decided to be buried here. The other thing is that one of the roads coming into the city was actually passing through the park here on the other side of the Camac, and it might have been a reason why that they chose to base themselves here. So as I say, from the pictures there, it was a unique find, and nothing has ever been, as I say, documented or recorded about it.
Yeah, the other thing about these lakes is when they're putting them in, they had fabulous hindsight really and foresight to cater for the wildlife, and as you can see, the wildlife that was here before they were put in, there was no wildlife, and as you can see now, this pond is full. The very first week that pond filled up, there was over 40 swans come in, which is a big thing, and the population of the wildlife has grown because of the habitat surrounding all these lakes. It's left untouched, you know, which is the best way. There's plenty of foodstuffs in the ponds along the hedgerows, and also in this particular pond here, we have three turtles in this one. They're approximately about a foot in diameter. They're fairly big, and God knows what else is in it, but certainly from a wildlife point of view, it's absolutely fabulous. It's a great meeting point for families here at the weekends, so it's a good thing. It's a good addition, and we can move on now, I think, up to the second lake and the third lake.
Well, we'll leave our party there enjoying their park life for now and take a musical break for some park life of our own. Here on The Sod Show are one of the biggest Britpop acts of all time with Park Life. It's Blur.
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as a morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as John Scott Brewer's group. He gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him. Who's that gut lord marching? You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise. Hand in hand, throw it there. Park life. one, except on Wednesdays when I get rudely awakened by the dustman. I put my trousers on, have a cup of tea, and I think about leaving the house. I feed the pigeons, I sometimes feed the sparrows too. It gives me a sense of enormous well-being. And then I'm happy for the rest of the day, safe in the knowledge there will always be a bit of my heart devoted to it. You know, and it's not about you joggers who go round.
Park Life from Blur on the Sod Show. Let's head back out to the park, to Corker Park, and here's Peter Dunnigan.
Just explain what we're looking at, Moira.
We're looking at a sign. It really tells you the direction of the iWalk. We have an iWalk for the park, and you can get Joe's comments and the history of the park on the iWalk. You can download it from the website, Corker Park, the council's website. So this just gives you an idea that you're on the route of the iWalk.
But it looks like it's just like car park painted on the tarmac as you're walking along.
Yeah, it's a stencil sign just to let you know that you're in the right place, you're at the start of the...
Ah, very good.
Yeah, so it's divided into five different sections, and it's where people from Ireland would have emigrated to in times of the famine, and the trees representing those different continents are planted in the area. So it's very significant, yeah.
Brown now here compared to further down. As I say, a lot of what you see in this park has changed over time through natural and human processes. And obviously, as Joe pointed out, those lakes that we just walked past, and we're going to see another set of lakes very shortly, we're all part of a bigger thing, obviously for immunity purposes, but also as a way to control flood levels of water coming from the River Camac, because this area was prone for flooding by the river over different times. The last time it was in 1993, it caused serious flooding further down and actually flooded out the houses, which you might have just seen as we turned in to walk around the side of these lakes. So one of the things that the council has been doing over the last 10-15 years was to kind of come up with ways to try and balance that out somehow, to control the flood water if there ever was, as it has been of late, very heavy sudden downpours of water. So what they've done initially first was to kind of remove the topsoil off the land further down here, so that when the Camac flooded, it would actually flow over, but actually wouldn't go any further, and it would just hold there, and then it would eventually subside back into the water again when it stopped raining. He also then built mounds all around the edges of the park, particularly down the lower end, and again that was just kind of form an embankment to stop the water from again travelling anywhere near the houses. And then obviously, as I say, they built these attenuation lakes to control the flood levels, and at certain times then the water would flow. If the Camac, if there was a serious amount of water coming down, it would just flow in and directly into the lakes themselves. But as you saw there now, they've turned out to be a little mini ecosystem and a complete habitat on its own. The set of lakes which you will be seeing very shortly are being put for another different use. But these ones here are very much for the wildlife side of things. And very recently, the Zorbing was the latest attraction that was brought into this park, where you could get into one of these bowls and then you could actually travel across the water by pushing yourself along. So they had it there, and they had it also just on the other side, because obviously when you take all that dig out that side, you have to put it somewhere, which Joe referred to earlier, Skeleton Hill, the mound. They actually have turned that mound, which is a viewing point. If you, it's good if you get up on top of it, you have a great view across at the Dublin and Wicklow Mountains. But they use the one side of it for this absorbing ball, so you come running, galloping down the side of it at quite a bit of a speed. But it just gives you a sense of how the landscape has changed. Obviously, when this was, as I was saying earlier, it was medieval lands, at times leased out to tenants who would have farmed here. They would have grown vegetables, tilled for crops. Eventually, when it was, when we come to the 1700s, there was this industrial process brought in. As I was saying, it was an iron mill and a corn mill just further down here. And then just not far from here was the remnants of the gunpowder mills. There would have been a lot of, the indication with the trees, there's an awful lot of willow, alder grow and hazel grows here. And they would have been the type of trees that would have grown. What we think this land was maybe about 1,000, 1,500 years ago, it would have been very much marsh because it was, as I referred to earlier, it was a floodplain of the River Camac. And that's how we got its name, Corrick. Corrick being the marsh, an old Irish Gaelic version or name for marsh. And a lot of the trees would imply wet conditions and had a role to play in helping to absorb the water. But in the time of the industrial processes, one of the key components of making gunpowder was charcoal, and one good source of that was either alder or hazel. So obviously here was a good source of it. So this is why we think that the people originally setting up the gunpowder mills came here and started utilising. So you begin a whole process where the landscape suddenly began to be eroded. The trees were gradually being cut down. And then at times when the, which we refer to later on, the families that came to live here and built an actual house, they would have started planting specimen trees. They would have planted a lot of mature woodlands. And then at certain times, when times were hard, they would have cut down those trees again for as a way to make a make some income. And then, of course, when Dublin County Council acquired the property in 83 and then opened it as a park in 86, they began a process within the space of 20 years to plant a lot of the trees that you now see around you today. And I think it was something like on the lines of 20,000 trees have been planted, mostly of broadleaf deciduous basis, which has helped to kind of enhance the landscape even further. Again, it gives it this rural feel to it. The whole idea of this particular park was to be an amenity for the local people of Cundalkin and Talla, but we find more and more now there's visitors coming from all over the country to here.
Well, we're out of time for this week's Sod Show, but consider that part one as we'll return next week with more from Corker Park. For more information on the show or to get in touch, head over to sodshow.com on the web or find us on Twitter via @sodshow. Whatever you do in the great outdoors and whoever you do it with, enjoy yourselves. We'll talk to you soon.